Hi, it's Diane. It is Wednesday, October 30th. I'm here with the 3 o'clock group. So far, we have Laura and Lisa. Glad you're both here. And Laura, have you, I know this is your first call. Did you get a chance to listen to the orientation call by any chance?
I did, and I've been trying to listen to other calls and some Sanity School stuff to get up to speed. So I'm doing my best.
Well, and we'll handhold you, so don't worry, no stress, make it super easy for you, and that's why we're here. So congratulations on making it, and we'll get you going. So what we're going to start with celebrations and check-ins. So somebody want to just jump in and get us started?
Sure, I can. This is Lisa. There's nothing huge that stands out in terms of celebrations this past week, except that we're making it.
We're making it
through the day, every day. Last week was Activate the Brain, or 2 weeks ago, and I think we're at a good place with my child's medication. And I have no idea if this has any correlation, but the day that I gave my son a lot of protein before his therapy lesson, meaning chicken nuggets, he had one of the best therapy sessions he's ever had. Wow. And I don't know, it could have just been a good day or whatever, but I really am trying to explore what protein does for his brain.
Love that. And I love that you're using the word explore, because that's really about, it's about seeing what works and what doesn't, and there's going to be days that he's going to eat a big giant steak and then he's going to have a horrible day and vice versa, right? And so it's about just kind of noticing and paying attention, and protein's a lot of parents have good success with making sure that their kids' brain has sustainable energy, which protein's the best way to do that. So congratulations.
Yeah.
Laura, what about you?
So also under the category of activating the brain, because I wasn't able to make a call last week, so I tried to listen in and be thinking about this. And for my 9-year-old, he was really struggling to complete his reading over the weekend because somehow it had never gotten written down on his daily homework list, and so all of a sudden on Sunday he had all this reading to do and was having a hard time. In between one chapter and the rest of it, we said, what if we activated your brain by activating your body? And he walked / jogged on the treadmill for an hour while watching a video, which is, of course, what got him onto the treadmill because he could get screen time. But then he came back down and we noticed his reading speed increased from, 4 minutes a page to 3 minutes a page, which is a big deal. So we were really, really excited. And he got through the rest of his reading.
Awesome. Love that. Well, and I love that you guys are – everybody's playing with activating the brain. It's such a great tool. So where do you want to take aim – this week, Laura?
I want to try and figure out what is going on at school with regards to how he's keeping track of what he's supposed to do when he gets home. Because we're not getting, either he's not writing stuff down in his planner, or he is, but somehow between the stage of writing it in the planner and putting it in the bag, there's something happening. So we're missing something during that part of the day, and I have no idea what it is.
So it sounds like you want to make sure that you have a system in place for capturing assignments, and you're at the stage where you're still even trying to figure out why the one you've got isn't working. So you're kind of at rinse and repeat. Is that fair?
Yes.
Okay, cool. And does that feel – so is it assignments generally? Is it any particular assignments? He's 9, so it's probably just kind of a bucket of assignments. Is that fair?
Well, yeah. So for a while it was just the math book, and that was a big thing. But it seems to be a bigger issue that unless – yeah, and I don't know. It's all over the place.
He has.
Well, and the reason I ask is because, like, with older kids, because there's such diversity in, you know, this teacher assigns this way, this teacher assigns this way.
Right.
You approach it a little bit differently, but it does he have more than one teacher assigning assignments, or is it one class?
It's just one classroom.
Yeah. Okay. So does that feel specific enough for you to take AMUN?
I think so.
Okay. Well, we'll just play with it and see what happens.
Okay.
Lisa, remind me how old your child is.
He is 6, going on 3/4.
Okay. So where do you want to take AIM?
I have no idea. Because I look at him as a 3 or 4 year old, I see his behaviors and I'm just like, well, I guess that's how a 3 and 4 year old acts. So one thing is the morning routine, just getting him to dress himself. But I'm also trying to explore and figure out, and I talked to Elaine a little bit about this last week. My son's imagination, he's so into pretend play that he can become very aggressive and mean if I do not play along with him constantly, or if I cannot do what it is he wants me to do. For instance, last week he wanted me to literally catch him a deer so that he could ride on Santa's sleigh with a reindeer.
Okay.
And so me trying to tell him no, it gets very exasperating.
Yeah.
Because his imagination is just so going crazy. He wants.
Well, and it's his imagination plus his hyper-focus, right? And so it's that
exactly.
I had one person tell me once that arguing with a kid who's hyper-focused is like arguing with a drunk. It's just not easy at all.
It is. Exactly. Yeah. And so trying to figure out how to best interact with him in those moments.
Okay. So do you want to take aim on how to handle it when he gets hyper-focused, or do you want to roll back and look a little bit at morning? Okay.
Yeah, I think hyper-focused. Yeah.
Okay. And so is it hyper-focused during pretend play? Is that even better in terms of specificity, or is it just hyper-focused generally?
Okay. Yeah.
Awesome. Okay, so we are going to talk today about parenting positively. And I'm going to make sure I've got my workbook open here. And we're on page, anybody know before me? Because for some reason my pages got mixed up there.
Yeah, hold on. I got to run to my computer to get it.
Okay, we're on page 26 when you get it. We're talking about parenting positively, and, you know, most parents that come to our programs already have this idea that, you know, positivity and strong relationships is a critical part of what our kids need to help them be successful. I mean, I think that the quote I love to share is, you know, rules without relationship equal rebellion. And for our kids, particularly because they have such an opportunity to make mistakes more than traditional kids do, it's really important to kind of put some effort and some focus on positivity as a way to keep ourselves kind of in check. So we are always, you know, kind of building instead of breaking down, and to strengthen that relationship, because ultimately what we need as these kids get older is a strong ability to collaborate, so that you can help them become independent. And so, you know, one of you mentioned kind of getting dressed in the morning, and you know, the it's going to be much easier to kind of build and work together on how to help him become more independent and getting dressed if you've got a good, strong, fun relationship than it is that you've been arguing about something for, you know, hours or weeks or months or whatever. And so this idea of focusing on positivity in the relationship first becomes so important. And I kind of want to give this as a little bit of a soapbox to those of you with younger kids, because it's really easy to forget as they start to get older, because there's so many more things to take care of. And I was on the older kids group yesterday, and one of the moms was confessing the fact that she spends, you know, 80 to 90% of the conversations they have is about, did you do this? And where is this? And how come this didn't get done? And all this stuff, instead of really focusing on enjoying each other and having a good time. And, you know, sometimes it's easier with younger kids because there's not as many responsibilities, but sometimes as parents, it's hard no matter how old the kids are. There's some research that they did in terms of positivity and kids, and in order to have a healthy relationship, the ratio of corrections to praises needs to be 4 praises for every 1 correction. And so for our kids, because they need a lot of correcting, it means that we got to do a lot of praising. And so sometimes it's about, you know, catching them when they're being good. Sometimes it's about ignoring some of the things that you want to correct and just thanking them when they follow through. I remember kind of learning with my kids that if they didn't make it all the way to the dishwasher, to say, thank you so much for bringing your dishes to the counter. I really appreciate it. And just kind of leaving it at that instead of focusing on, but you didn't put it in the dishwasher. As we talk about positivity, this is something we're going to loop back on over and over again in the process. And so it's a critical response area. There's lots of components underneath this. At the bottom of this page is a list of the ones that are traditionally kind of in positivity. It's about the tone of the home. And we talk about all of these in Sanity School as well. It's the tone of the home, not taking it personally, acknowledging and validating, which ACE is a tool we talk about a lot, showing compassion, championing and celebrating, non-judgment, being open, using humor and play, being transparent, and tackling perfectionism. So all of these things are things that we think about when we think about positivity, but underneath it all is that as parents, we've got to focus on the relationship first, make sure that relationship stays strong so that we can build those collaborative muscles and ultimately help our kids to be more successful. So I'm curious what comes up for you guys. And oh, hey, Melanie. See, Melanie joined us.
Hey.
So what comes up for all of you guys around this area of parenting positively?
I personally have seen great rewards in changing my tone towards him. As soon as I started learning about that he wasn't actively rebelling, he was just developmentally, you know, behind, and it just helped a ton to see, for my heart, to see him as a 3 to 5 year old rather than the 6 year old that he is. And so I have seen great rewards with that, but it is exhausting.
What is it about it that is exhausting, having a 3-year-old when you thought you had a 6-year-old?
Yes.
Okay.
To really be in his world, to build the relationship with him, it's like I got to really act and play and all that, and it's just exhausting. I have 4 other kids, and he's the youngest, and so that's where I struggle is I have older kids that I relate with better because we're having more adult conversations. And so I'm just tired by the time I get to him and, you know, have to play reindeer and Santa Claus and all this. So, but I'm finding great rewards to it.
Yeah. Well, and that's the piece of it is that there's several components. Part of it is that you've been doing it for a long time and you're just literally exhausted, right? And
right.
Part of it is that, you know, you've been doing it, you're doing it a little bit longer than you originally planned to. And so there's probably even though you get it, there's still some of that disappointment there. So kind of 2 things come up is one is noticing those moments where you are enjoying either him or your other kids and kind of allowing yourself to be fed. And then the other piece of it is just to kind of really, really find ways to embrace that mindset of the 3 to 5 challenge so that it's not, oh my gosh, okay, so I guess he's only 3. It's how cool is it that I have a kid that's got a lot of energy and I can have fun with them? And it's that kind of finding the perspective shift. And we talked about perspective shift a few weeks ago in PSS. It's that sort of finding the perspective shift that helps raise your energy level so that you can engage longer, more happily, all those other things. Does that resonate?
Yeah.
Cool. Other thoughts about positivity and what's easy and what's hard?
Hi, Laura here. To me, all of it is hard. This is not my natural strength is craving. So that's like something I'm really going to have to work on to learn how to do it and to do it authentically. I historically am a person that says like, right, like great job getting it to the counter, but you know it's supposed to be in the dishwasher, right? So like learning to stop before that end piece could be huge. It's just I don't think I've ever actively worked at doing that before.
Yesterday in the call, we were talking about the butt, right? It is this sort of these big giant butts that come in, and it's that sort of how do you just bite your tongue and stop with the celebration?
Yeah, I think I'm going to need to work on that. Yeah, I'm sure I'll have lots of opportunities to try and practice throughout the week.
Yeah, so Laura, I guess the question I want you to sit with or answer, whichever you're more comfortable with, is kind of what is it that's made it hard for positivity to be in your toolbox? Is there a limiting belief? Is there a history from your parents that you didn't, you know, you don't toot your own horn, you just work really hard? And what do you think is underneath it?
Oh, I never thought about it that way before, but yeah, I totally see that aspect of it, like that, and that always expecting perfection of yourself and others, which is totally not healthy, I get that, but that's sort of in the back of my mind. So I'm, you know, constantly expecting the kiddos to be striving for perfection, and of course that's not realistic, right? So
yeah, no, the thing that just pops into my head is think about when you remember in hotel rooms back in, I don't know how old you guys are, I'm pretty old, but in the hotel rooms like in the 80s when you'd go into the bathroom and they'd have that little thing on the toilet seat that told you that they could clean the toilet. And it was like this sort of, what do you mean? Of course you can. I better not need to know that you clean the toilet. And we kind of have this mindset of, you know, expectations, and we do it with ourselves and we do it with our kids. And so why not celebrate with our kids?
Right.
When our expectations are met, that's awesome. Especially these kids who have a hard time meeting expectations.
Right.
How often do you do it with yourself? Are you one of those sort of, if somebody compliments you, you say, oh, no, it's nothing?
Yes, totally. Right?
Yeah. So it's something to watch, right? And so it's the way... Yeah. It's part of your brain wiring, and it's a great opportunity to say, is this working for me? Is it working for my kids? And do I want to make a shift? So what do you think?
Totally. It's just, I never thought of it that way before.
Cool. So, Melanie, I don't know if you want to go ahead and check in and talk a little bit about your perspective on positivity. I'd love to hear what's going on.
Yeah. So my perspective on positivity is that every time I manage to reframe and deepen my positivity stance, it always pays off. That's like, that's my go-to parenting, like, I don't know, booster shot. So the trick is when it starts getting challenging and I need to dig deeper, then it becomes the question of how do I resource myself so I can engage in that level of positive parenting.
So you mean like feed, how do you feed yourself so you have the energy to be positive when it's not easy to be positive?
Exactly.
Yeah. So you've got a toolbox of positivity, and then you've got a toolbox of feeding Melanie so that Melanie can be positive.
Exactly. And basically that for me is like, if I can't do enough to support myself so that I can be positive, then that's, you know, it all backs up. So I guess what I'm celebrating is that I've managed to stay over on the positive side through a pretty challenging couple of months.
Yeah.
And it's and realizing that it's going to keep being challenging that way for a while just because of of the nature of what we have to ask our kiddo to do and which she is not finding it easy to do.
Yeah.
That
well,
going to school every day thing, man. That
yeah.
learning thing, man, it's a real drag.
It is. It is. So,
you know, that getting up every morning and going to bed every night thing, it is such a drag.
Well, and when your kid is in that space of everything is a battle, it becomes about how do you what's your armor look like? And how do you, you know, something you said earlier made me think, part of it is noticing when you're ready for the battle and
mm-hmm.
when you're not.
And well, it's
part
even
of
not
feeding
even,
yourself is, go ahead.
I mean, it's not even a battle. It's about continuing to take the here kitty kitty stance and just continuing to like refill the treats and the positivity and the patience, because you know at least the cat is coming out in its own time versus the cat cowering under the bed or scratching.
Well, so what is it? So I guess the question is what is it that if you're seeing momentum,
mm-hmm.
what is it that makes it hard to just lean into the momentum?
Because we don't actually have momentum, right? Mm-hmm. We have daily victories, but all it takes is a substitute teacher or the weather to change or the sun to get up later or, you know, time zones to change or, you know, the friend next door not to be able to play, and then we are back to trying to cover lost ground, to recover lost ground.
Well, and it's interesting, part of what I feel like there's a theme this week, or at least for my calls, but one of the things we were talking about yesterday again is this sort of idea that we're climbing up a mountain, right? And
mm-hmm.
sometimes when we're climbing up a mountain, we're actually going up. And sometimes when we're climbing up a mountain, we're going down. And sometimes we're going straight. And we're still making progress. And I think that's part of it is kind of finding a way to rise up and see what success really looks like. And I don't know about you, Melanie, but I think for some people that kind of two-step forward, three-step back, even kind of using that language
yeah.
feels kind of exhausting. And so the question is, you know, today we didn't step forward, right? Yesterday we stepped forward, today we didn't. We're where we are, right?
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And so I guess the question is how do you feel about the perspective you're using on most days, and how is it doing in terms of feeding you?
So what I would say is that, you know, generally speaking, not backsliding represents a victory.
Mm-hmm.
So,
just but so what is? But hang on a second. But we know. But mm-hmm. we know that these kids have ups and downs all the time,
mm-hmm.
right? So,
mm-hmm.
so what's the difference between a regular roller coaster and a backslide?
Well, I would say I would measure it according to the tone of the home. I mean, backsliding is where things are getting angrier and edgier and more escalated on her end, even if I'm holding steady what I'm doing.
Yeah. Yeah, and that makes it hard.
And the roller coaster is, you know, how much effort and time it takes to accomplish the usual basics of the schedule.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that makes sense. So
the situation was the first month of school, we were getting to school on time, like 80% of the time. And then at the beginning of October, it started to be 1 to 2 hours late to school every day, and getting it back down to like 20 to 30 minutes late to school seems like a major victory.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
but there's pushback for every single day.
Right. Well, and so the thing that's coming up for me, and then I want to kind of move on and give some other folks some space, is this idea of non-judgment. And if you look at something as part of the roller coaster and as normal and as expected, sometimes, for most of us, our energy is different than if we feel like this shouldn't be happening because I thought we fixed this 2 months ago.
Right.
And so that's kind of what's coming up for me around what you're saying, is this sort of, if you look at it and say, okay, right now we're at a point where it's taken us 2 hours to get to school. And so that's where we are right now. It's not good or bad, worse, better, whatever else. It's where we are. What's the next step? You know, what are we focusing on next? What's a little bit more independent, or a little bit more, you know, a little less stressful, a little less angry, a little less whatever, right? And so if you start where you are instead of evaluating compared to where you were yesterday or 2 months ago, what shifts for you?
Well, I think I am doing it, because otherwise I wouldn't be getting, like, I would be graphing the time we were getting out and, like, you know, pushing harder. But it's just like every day is a new slate, and, you know, every day I use the best practices, and we'll just see whether it works or not, or how well it works, or how responsive, and then what can I do in the rest of the day in the rest of the space to give her the support she needs to be able to, you know, pull herself together for one more day of school.
Yeah, that makes sense. That makes sense.
Okay,
so Laura or Lisa, any other thoughts on positivity, or if there's anything in particular you'd like to get some laser coaching around? We've got time because we have a small group.
This is Lisa again. Real quick, I really, something that you said about, okay, the child being to school 2 hours late, and you saying, it's neither good nor bad. That something struck me that I was like, no, that's bad. So I'm starting to see, like, the, okay, yes, I must have in my mind a picture of what is good and bad. But then the reality is later in life, and I realize it's later in life, showing up to work 2 hours late is bad.
Here's the subtle shift, right? If I see something as bad, I'm going to go into my little alarm button is going to go off. And it's like, oh my gosh, I have to fix this. This is terrible. This shouldn't be happening. Oh my gosh, he's going to lose his job when he's 20 if he's late. I mean, my 20-year-old was running late today, so I can say that. But it's this sort of, you know, if my alarm button goes off because I think something is bad and I focus on the badness of it, I'm not problem solving anymore. And so if I can stay in that place of, here, you know, yes, you're right. Society has rules. Society has standards. If you yell at your boss, you're probably going to get fired. I mean, all of these things are true. And the minute you go to judgment, your ability to problem solve changes. You're more likely to be triggered, and you're not able to be the same kind of parent. Most of us are not able to be the same kind of parent when we're triggered as when we're balanced. Does that resonate?
Yes. Yeah.
Cool.
Have you ever experienced giving kids praise and they actually don't like it?
Yes.
It happens a lot. Yes. Everybody can say yes.
Okay, so please talk to me about that.
So it's a real common piece, and I think part of it is sometimes kids just don't like the focus to be on them, whether it's good focus or bad focus. They just don't like attention shining on them. Sometimes they feel a lot of guilt and shame about other stuff that they've done not so great, and so when we praise them about a little thing, they get frustrated because they wish they were better in other places. But if you have a child who has a hard time accepting praise, a couple things could be going on. And it's about figuring out, you know, how to give them praise without making them uncomfortable. The other thing that just popped into my head as I was saying this is that there's a lot in love languages. And I know I was noticing that my boyfriend has a very different love language than I do. And we were on vacation together last week, and he kept giving me all these words of appreciation. And I'm like rolling my eyes. And I'm like, you just said thank you 7 times for the same thing. And it's like, for him, it was like really, and I was like, okay, I got to remember to say thank you all the time for every single thing, because that's his love language. And so this, I think the same thing happens with our kids sometimes, is that words of appreciation may not be their love language. And maybe it's a, hey, let's go watch a movie together, you're awesome, or high five, or a hug, or whatever else. It's that sort of finding ways to help them to feel appreciated, even if it's not words. Does that resonate?
Yeah.
And mine smells it as a manipulation tactic. Because there are some,
yeah,
you know, I give you these three praises and then you do this nice thing for me systems out there. But, like, that's tantamount to a declaration of war at my house. Thank you for doing this. Well, just because you praised me, I'm not going to.
Right. Yeah. Well, and that's,
okay,
you know, and that's
you.
Part of that is triggers.
It's just helpful to know that I'm not the only one, because here,
yes,
I'm trying to be positive, and yet he doesn't always like it. And I thought, what's wrong with this? But okay.
Well, and it might be interesting to have a good conversation with him and say, I want you to know that you make me feel good, or I want you to know that I appreciate you, or, and I know that it's uncomfortable for you. Is there something that I can do that would be a little gesture? Could I give you a secret sign? Could I, you know, tickle you? Could I, what, I mean, we've got younger kids, so a lot of times they like more playful sorts of things than more grown-up-y kinds of things. And so,
right,
think about having that conversation with him or in front of him or whatever else makes sense.
Okay, yeah.
Cool. Lisa, anything coming up for you as we're having this conversation?
That was Lisa.
Oh, Lisa, I'm sorry. Laura, anything coming up for you? I'm learning the voices.
Sorry. No worries. No, that, this is all good. This is all very helpful. I have 3 kiddos, all with very different issues, I would say. And I feel like there's a little bit for everyone here.
Yeah, yeah. Should we dive in, Laura, a little bit on this whole thing of assignment capture? Would that be helpful for you?
Yes.
Okay. So you asked about what is going on at school, and I think that question, what is going on, is a really great place to start from the curiosity perspective. And so it's that sort of looking with the teacher and noticing what's working, what's not working. Is he even aware that there's a process? And just kind of exploring what your current state is. You know, what can he do independently? What can he do independently sometimes? What can he never do independently? And kind of starting from a place of curiosity, looking at all the different angles, and then going back and saying, so what are some of the executive functions that make it hard for him to engage in the process that's there? And then the next step after that is to how to morph the structure to accommodate some of the executive function challenges. That's really kind of the shortcut of some of the model stuff we're working on, but it feels like you're on the right space to start with the what's going on. So when you get curious, what do you think are a few things that might be going on for him?
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't know if he's getting distracted as much as
Let's be clear. So we're not trying to find out exactly what's going on. Let's just brainstorm some things. So he might be getting distracted. What else might be going on?
Right. I think he may have some working memory issues.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know if they don't have processes in place to deal with kids that aren't doing everything the exact same way.
So the standard way may require more executive function than he has. Is that what you mean?
Yes, but also
I think other kids may be getting stuff done during class, and so he ends up with more homework because he can't get it done during class, and so that doesn't exist in the regular system of accounting for extra work, right? So he's sort of outside of the realm of what the teacher is even thinking of as homework.
Okay. Anything else that you'd add to your list of maybes?
Oh, I don't know. You got anything for me? That's all I could come up with.
So how strong is your relationship with his teacher right now?
I've met her once. That's about it.
So this could be a really great place to start partnering together to kind of figure out what's going on and figure out what might work for him.
Right.
How do you open the door to a conversation with his teacher?
I think I'll email and ask for a time to meet and see if there's a sit-down time or at least a phone time.
Yeah. And it may be that she's noticing, too, or maybe that she has no idea, or he or she has having no idea at all. But part of what you're trying to establish, especially because you've only met this teacher once, you're trying to establish some collaboration. And here's what's working at home, and here's what's working at school. And so finding something easy like, hey, we've got to get a system that works for everybody for capturing assignments is a great place to start building that collaboration muscle.
Right. And I know she knows it's a problem because early on in the year, he would get home and he wouldn't have his homework, but we could do the whole, well, let's text a friend's mom and get a photo of it and do it at home. And we did that a couple times. Then I was like, wait a minute, this is actually a pattern and a problem. This isn't like a random one-off here and there. So he was trying to remember to bring home the homework he hadn't done the day before, and it was rolling to the point where he wasn't getting to do recess. So I know that his teacher is seeing it at least from that side.
Okay. So what's your course of action in terms of taking some next steps to focus on this?
I think I need to email her and see if there's a time we can meet or talk, and then maybe set up some talking points for what we're going to discuss, try to figure out what they do now to try and use their assignment books, when they're using them, how they're using them, how the bags are getting packed at the end of the day, because that seems to be an issue too, and figure out where we can tweak as necessary to help him out.
Yeah, yeah. So I guess the question I always ask, because you've got, you know, younger kids, but how do you involve your son in this process?
Well, I don't know. At this point, I mean, we've tried a number of things together, which are basically just all relying on him to come up with other ways to try and remember at the end of the day. So, for example, the inside of his backpack says math book in huge letters. So I don't know if this is a conversation you think that I should bring him in on.
Well, I think part of it is figuring out how much I would never encourage somebody to bring them in at a zero level, but the question is kind of how will he react to it? It's kind of like if he's really judging himself because he can't get it to work, then spending some time with a teacher ahead of time, trying to come up with some ideas and bringing them to him to see which ones he'd like to try might be different than having him sit in a conversation with you and the teacher to work together to try to come up with some ideas that might work. It just really kind of depends on where he's at with the challenge and how much buy-in you have.
Yeah, I think he really wants to remember the homework. And so I think that he's probably willing to try anything is my belief based on how upset he's been when he gets home and he realizes he doesn't have something.
Yeah. Well, it's really funny because the first thing that pops into my head is you're saying this. So my business partner, Elaine, who you guys all know Elaine, right, is an ADHD adult. And I can't tell you how many times she says to me, I think it's so cute when you think I'm going to remember Diane. And it's this sort of thing that it's this sort of, if we if we our kids want to be able to remember, and if they just feel like they've got to just try harder to remember, sometimes it sets them up, because it may not be about just trying harder to remember. It may be literally that their brain is not yet in a space where it can remember, or will not be easily in a space where it can remember, and they're going to have systems and structures. And the cool thing about younger kids is that as grownups, we can help them, and we can be those systems and structures, or we can help with those systems and structures in place to support them. Does that resonate?
Absolutely. And what I keep telling him is, you're only going to get more homework for the rest of your life. Whatever your job is, you're going to have homework probably. And you've got to figure out a way to remember it now, because even if you could remember just your math book every day, next year it won't be just the math book. So it's all about, we're just trying to come up with ways that are going to help us for the rest of our lives.
So I'm going to suggest you shift your language. Are you open to that?
Sure.
So you're really not trying to help him remember, because this remembering is one tool that you could use to capture assignments. And if he's a person with a working memory challenge, asking, you know, asking him to work on remembering is like asking somebody who needs glasses to work on seeing better.
Gotcha.
And so what you're really trying to do is help him to come up with a process that will help him capture his assignments. And it may or may not have anything to do with him remembering, because he may not have that skill, or he may or may not develop that skill. And it's not, you know, there's lots of adults who walk around with yellow notepads in their pockets because they don't remember, but they've got a system for making sure that they don't forget, which is different. Does that make sense?
It sure does.
And I think that sometimes when we say remember and we use that word remember, suddenly they think, I'm supposed to be able to just remember. And a lot of these kids just can't.
Got it. That makes a ton of sense. Thank you.
Okay.
May I jump in here?
Absolutely.
I'm wondering if you have any kind of a 504 IEP, because a common accommodation is to get a second set of books to keep at home so you don't have the transport problem.
Oh, no, we don't. We're in, like, the early stages of testing, et cetera.
Yeah, so that's part of what can come out of the brainstorming process. Thank you for that, Melanie. There's lots of great accommodations. You know, having the teacher send you the list of assignments via email. You know, putting it on the board, and if your child has a phone, being able to take a picture of the board. I mean, there's lots of different things you can do. It's just a matter of kind of figuring out what's going to work best for you and for the teacher and for your son.
Okay.
Cool. Other thoughts on positivity or areas where you guys need some help? Happy to jump in. What makes it hard to stay positive?
Let's see. Hungry, tired.
Hungry, angry, lonely, tired, right? Is that halt?
Yep.
Yeah, so they're hungry, we're hungry. Yeah, we're frustrated. All of those trigger producers. That's right. So part of this is managing our triggers. What were you going to say, Melanie?
I was going to say excessive cognitive load, right? You know, three people are asking you for the same thing at the same time, or it's different things at the same time.
Right. So you're overwhelmed.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which takes us back to the conversation we were having earlier about kind of the focusing on what feeds you. So
exactly.
You know, a conversation about positivity probably isn't complete with, you know, what do you do as a parent to kind of keep yourself in a space where you can stay more positive, whether it's about remembering, Laura, like you were talking about, just remembering to praise, or, you know, keeping your emotional energy up high enough, where Melanie, you were talking a little bit about that. So what
and
are
even
the tools?
Remembering that keeping it positive is so much easier than trying to put everybody together after a meltdown.
Yeah. Well, and when you're on the way into a meltdown, it's really hard to stay positive. And I don't know about you, but my kids always can smell a fake positive comment from a mile away. You know, your words are
pretty upfront about, you know, when I start hitting my, oops, I'm starting to lose mommy skill, and so this is where you don't take it personally, or I'm going to remove myself from the situation, or, you know, here's what my boundary is, and I'm going to work very hard to stay on the positive side of it. But just to be clear about that is helpful. And I also wanted to loop around to that comment about, you know, missing school is bad. There is that cultural value of you got to be there. And I'm always concerned about, you know, lost instructional time, because our school does not waste time. But at the same time, you know, if I get her there but she's upset and crying, that's not, she's going to be missing that time either way. So I'm trying to maximize her learning opportunities.
So, Melanie, what do you need to be willing is true in order to consider that being late for school is not going to be the end of the world?
Well, it's not the end of the world. And I'm already there with that. But it's that, I think, in fact, I'm already to the point where, you know, missing school entirely is not the end of the world. So I'm just kind of in the being grateful for what we get, and also looking at it one day at a time, and also looking for you know, those re-energizing moments.
The question I want to ask, and choose to not answer it if you don't want to, but how afraid are you that it's going to get worse?
I don't think I'm afraid of it. I think that's just what we're dancing with.
So what does dancing look like?
One step forward, two steps back, three steps forward, two steps back.
Yeah.
And it's about matching the energy of my dancing partner with my goal being to get as far as we can, and then letting go of the rest.
Yeah.
And looking for the joy in the moments.
Well, and love all those pieces that kind of keep your energy up, because that's part of what makes it more sustainable. I guess I'm kind of curious to kind of get to the bottom of what is it that made it hard instead of just making it part of this is what's going on today.
Because giving up school time is giving up time to myself.
So there's some resentment in there. Is that fair?
Yeah.
Okay. That makes perfect sense, Melanie, because you're sitting here and it's like, not only is your kid not getting out of the house, but you're not able to take the time to work on your business or to go to the gym or whatever it is that you need to do to stay sane in those few hours you have when you don't have kids in the house.
Exactly.
Yeah. So does it become more about working on your resentment, or does it become more about finding some things to treat yourself with while you're dealing with some really difficult, high-maintenance kid stuff? What's most important for you right now?
I think it's a little bit of both, but just like really looking clearly at the sticking points and how do I work with it when I've gotten her out of the door and now can finally come back and look at, you know, starting my own breakfast an hour and a half late.
Right. Or what are your bare minimum, right?
Exactly.
I mean, do you you're a half an hour in and you're already a half an hour late and you know that you're hungry and you just say, you know what, I'm going to put you in front of the television for half an hour because I need to eat.
Well,
I'm making that up.
But no, I mean, that's what I did this morning is like, look, this is my hard stop. you're either going to school by then or you're coming with me to a very boring adult thing. And I'm going to eat, and either you're going to be ready or you're not. But, like, I'm in a place where I just need to go take care of myself right now.
And how does she respond when you take that space?
Well, she kind of, she pulls it together, but only just barely.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that I've then raised her stress level, and that it's going to, the next set of interactions are going to be that much more difficult.
So here's what came up for me immediately, Melanie. That's why I asked that question, is thinking about the conversation we had a few weeks ago about separation
mm-hmm.
anxiety
mm-hmm.
and think about her energy when you claim, I need to take care of myself, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's the what does that mean practically, and then there's the what that means energetically. And all of a sudden you're sucking the energy away from her and towards you.
Mm-hmm.
And part of what she's feeding on is that dynamic of the energy. She's pulling energy from you. She's pulling energy from you. She needs your energy. She needs your positivity. And I'm wondering,
mm-hmm.
even just shifting your language to, let's stop working on getting you out the door. Can we work together on getting me some breakfast because I'm hungry? So you're not separating from her, but you're together. You get the partnership, which is working on getting out the door, is working on something else. So it's almost like distracting the partnership. So how could that help or not help?
Well, it's worth giving a try and seeing what happens.
How would that be different for her or different for you?
Well, putting myself back higher up on the list, would be different. It's just that putting myself lower on the list got us a lot of forward momentum. So,
well, what if you look for the win-win?
Yeah.
What if the next phase of work is the win-win? You know that if you put yourself completely on hold, you know that you can make progress, and
yep.
you know that that caused some stress for you and some resentment
yep.
for you over the last several months. So the next phase of independence is, how do you find those small win-wins? And for you to figure out what are your battles, right? And it's that sort of, what are the two things that might make you feel a little bit better? It's like, wow, if I got time to eat breakfast every morning, I absolutely would feel a lot better than if I'm trying to, like, survive and get through and get her out the door before I'm even feeding myself. And then you solve to, okay, how do
mm-hmm.
I make sure that I'm eating every morning? And whether that's something the two of you are doing together, or whether that's something you're doing before she gets going, or that's something you do once she reaches a certain point and she's not progressing. But it's that prioritization of those few things that are going to be most critical for you.
Yep. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah. We're tackling one little problem solving bit at a time. It's just, yeah, so multi-layered and so tiny step by tiny step.
Yeah. Well, and part of it is that mindset that it is going to be a tiny step. And you'll get there. And it's that staying focused on the momentum and the progress rather than getting bogged down when it doesn't go the way that you want to. And it sounds like you're doing a pretty good job of staying in that space.
Yep.
Cool. All right. So I want
to do
a lot
of work to get to this space, though.
It has. You've worked really, really hard. I want to acknowledge that, too. Thank you, Melanie. But so I'm going to move to page 27 in the workbook and have us take some notes and do our wrap-up. So the four questions we ask at the end of every call are, what did I focus on or pay most attention to today? The second one is, what's my clarity or takeaway? What's an aha that I had? What's a realistic action step for me to take? And how do I set myself up for success with this action? So jot down a few notes, and I would love to hear from all three of you at least one aha and one action commitment. And whenever you're ready, jump in.
Okay, this is Lisa. I think I'm going to talk to my son, who's now in the car with me, about when I do praise him, what he appreciates. Okay, I'm talking on the phone for a moment. Wait. Yes. So that would be one thing, figuring out how to appreciate him so that he feels comfortable when I do praise him. However, we didn't talk, and it's totally fine, about taking aim on when he is hyper-focused. So I'm going to put that on the the board, the forum, because
let me give you the short answer. The short answer is that, there's a video I may share because I just listened to it this morning. It's when we try to bring in logic to someone who's hyper-focused. It is when it's this sort of, they ask and we answer, and then they ask again, and then we answer again, and then we give them seven reasons, and it's just sort of at some point as the adult, we've got to stop, right, and just say, and it may be a code word that you use. That's what I used to do in my family. It's kind of like asked and answered means we're done with this conversation right now, and or it may be that you say the answer now is no. If you keep asking, it's going to stay no. If you give me some space to think about it, it made me move to a maybe, or it's that sort of putting the line down as an adult and identifying when the conversation is no longer productive and stopping the conversation.
Okay. And there's a video on that, or?
I just happened to see someone, and the interesting thing, and I'll share it with you, he doesn't focus on the compassion and the positivity as much as I wish that he would, but he does have some strategies for kind of this idea of not taking the bait is what we call it. And actually, if you read, there's an article on our website called Not Taking the Bait, where it's this sort of, you don't have to continue to, if they can keep arguing with you, you don't need to keep arguing it back.
Okay, so that's what I look up, not taking the bait.
Not taking the bait. Yes.
Right. Okay.
Cool.
Thank you.
That was Lisa, right? So Laura, what about you?
Well, one thing that really stuck out for me was notice when you're enjoying it. Like when things are going well and it's something that can be celebrated, when we're having a positive relationship moment, to try and be conscious of that and notice and recognize that so that I can be looking for that more often, is something that stuck out to me, that I don't think I always notice it when things are going well. And to try and flag that, and to also notice when I instantly go into judgment mode so that I can take a step back and say, it's really, really not a big deal one way or the other, this very small thing that I've instantly become hyper judgmental on.
Okay. So how clear is that in terms of taking action?
Well, I don't know. Those are sort of vague concepts, aren't they?
Well, and I think the question is, are you at a stage where you want to just become more aware of how you're seeing it on a day-to-day basis? Or are you already aware that you want to do a behavior change and can focus on that? And so behavior changes could be just at the end of the day going, wow, when did I do this thing that I've been trying to do less? And how do I try to notice it more?
Right.
Are you more in the self-awareness stage, or are you more in the ready to take action stage?
I don't know. I mean, maybe part of it is noticing when I'm doing it or what is exactly what's going on around that behavior. Is it just coming up at certain times, or I don't know. If I were ready to take the next step, what would that be like, as opposed to just being curious and sort of gaining awareness of when I'm doing certain things?
Well, I think what I would suggest is that you take aim. So if you notice yourself going into that negative space around a particular thing, kind of coming up with some strategies and tips for how to either catch yourself when you're doing it, or apologize when you do it, or you know, try to put something up that you'll remember to do it. I mean, there's lots of different ways you could approach it, but it seems like you're still in that kind of exploration stage where you're really kind of even trying to understand enough about when you do it to be able to figure out, okay, what how do I even start trying to change this behavior? Is that fair?
I think that's probably true.
Okay. All right. So what, look at it and watch it for a while. You could do a, I don't know if you journal or reflect at the end of the day, but that might be a good thing to do is just kind of at the end of each day say, okay, so what did I notice about myself in terms of kind of the whole mindset piece of this whole thing?
Okay.
Cool. Melanie, what about you?
Yeah. So I think my action steps are to just really keep working on that one day at a time mentality and noticing when I'm shifting away from being able to maintain positively what am I thinking or what am I feeling at those times, because that might be useful to note down. And really looking for finding ways to integrate a little bit more win-win into where we're going with, as we continue to problem solve the recently emerged issues with mornings.
Okay. How clear does that feel to you?
It feels pretty clear. I mean, it's mostly what I'm focusing on is how are we troubleshooting mornings and what step at a time. And mostly I've been doing a lot of work on how do I, you know, what little take aims within it do I want to do as the situation continues to evolve.
Okay. Cool. All right. Well, if you need help getting staying clear or catching up in between, let us know.
All right. Thank you.
Cool. Awesome. Great call today, ladies. Thanks for your engagement and vulnerability. Next week is we're at the International ADHD Conference, and so if you're going to be in Philadelphia, join us there. And if not, there are no calls. The week of the 11th is a PSS call, so we'll talk to you that week. Thank you for all being here. Thank you.
Thanks.